That's true. Listen up. I know firsthand how limited a vessel medical insurance can be. This is why you need reliable medical coverage. More Dixon offers comprehensive global insurance tailored for yachts, covering everything from emergencies to routine checkups with flexible options and a single point of contact. More Dixon has been voted best health and medical insurance by captains and crew, including myself. Don't wait until the unexpected happens. Get covered today. Visit mdbl.im or email them at inquiries@mdbl.im for a free quote. Hi, everyone. Today, I'm joined by Captain Liam, one of the most forward-thinking voices in yachting. With more than two decades at sea, he's known for his calm leadership, his respected, driven culture on board, and his authenticity on social media, as you may well know him from the Captain's Chat through Yachting International Radio, where he often speaks about crew well-being and redefining what modern captaincy looks like. And congratulations, Captain, on the latest award that you have received.
Thank you very much. It's a team effort. It's yourself. It's all the hosts, the guests we had, and the crew, of course.
And I do want to share with everybody that in today's conversation, we'll be exploring what captains can actually do to create a healthier culture on board. And not just captains, like any person who is head of department or that has the capacity to lead others, because you don't need to be in a head of department role to lead others. So we are going to talk from onboarding to conflict management, even when there's little to no budget for training or extra programs. So, Captain Liam, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Humbled to be here. Really honored to kind of help in any way I can, because it's an unknown world out there in yachting, and every vessel is slightly different. So if as a community we can try and share things that have worked and haven't, I think we can come up with a better environment for our crew.
Absolutely. So let's start at the beginning. When you step on board as a captain, how do you immediately set the tone for well-being and respect? Like, what are those first few actions that let the crew know this is a safe, professional, and collaborative environment?
I'd say the small actions matter. And it's that welcoming feel about the presence and the personal approach to it. Because if you put a heart rate monitor on these crew that join, I can tell you it's through the roof. Like, the stress of getting on a plane, off a plane, into a taxi, to a crew, and then you've got certain crew meeting them. So firstly, before they even come on board, I generally establish their timelines. So the small manageable steps. So we email them with all the head of departments. Welcome on board, Sarah, for example. Looking forward to seeing you. When you join, please just take an hour or two and go to your cabin, settle in, tell your family you're here, have a cup of tea, coffee, and I'll meet you on the bridge at X time. And that X time, they come to the bridge and we just continue to de-escalate the stress levels and invite other heads of department in, your head of department. I'll have a discussion with you. I'll establish the requirements. So I'd like to just, you know, without going on too much, is just to say it's the small details that matter and just establish a safety zone. The bridge is a safe area. The crew cabin's a safe area. The crew mess is a safe area. And the less you say, the better. Because it's just too much. It's overwhelming. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that you really kind of talked about that small little thing that, I mean, I've been on boat for 16 years. You know, I had a long career. And I have never been welcomed in that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that people are, you know, something so simple as emailing, you know, somebody already pre-welcome you. It's like, oh, okay, like, it's good, you know, like, and you, like you said, like, we're nervous. It doesn't matter how many times you've been on a boat, there's still anxiety around it. So like, that does help you regulate yourself before you even enter the job. And then I think that's the biggest thing, because a lot of captains tell me, oh, you know, I have an open door policy. I'm like, yeah, in your head. So you're not communicating that through for the people around you to actually feel, okay, I can actually speak with this person you know, whatever that may be, whether it be professional or personal. And such a small step, like a welcoming email, hey, this is the timeline, go do set up. But sometimes we just are basically thrown into it.
Oh.
And there's no, the welcoming is put your bags there, put your uniform, here's a fire extinguisher, we're ready to go. And you're like, okay. So you're already in that fire flight mode. Yeah. This is how you're going to start your job.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's, thank you for sharing that, because it's such a simple, easy thing that everybody can apply today.
Yeah. And you've got longer time frames too. Like I had a chief officer return recently. I said, see you tomorrow. Like I don't need to see you today. Like you and I, we've done this before. So you relax, take the afternoon off, go for a swim, go for a run, time zone change, see you at 8 o'clock in the morning or 7 o'clock in the morning. The key for me is lead with presence, not pressure. And that's something. Presence, not pressure. And the more you look at people in the eyes and you feel what they're going through, the more that you can relate to them. And the goal is still to make the vessel perfect, the owner's happy, the charity best happy. But you got to build up to that.
Yeah.
You know, like you're saying, you don't want to start in full pressure mode. It's just not healthy, you know?
When we come into the industry the first time, maybe we weren't received with presence. We were received with pressure. And then over and over, it keeps happening. And then we kind of normalize that pressure is the standard. Like, this is how it should be done. And then even us from junior, then we become senior crew members, then we become head of departments. Unconsciously, sometimes we just keep repeating the same pattern that we were taught.
Yeah.
And it's up to us to say, okay, wait, we can do it differently. This obviously doesn't work. That's what I've been shown. Doesn't mean I have to repeat it. I think that's where, you know, even captains, head of departments, we always have that transition where it's like we step into a leadership role. We tend to do exactly what we have been, what we have seen.
Yeah.
And then we find ourselves in it.
Yeah.
Then we become a little bit of a rebel and we're like, okay, we're going to do it differently because that doesn't work for me. And I get that it takes time, but simple things like this is something that anybody can do. And maybe, you know, you said it, and I was like, ah, I never thought of doing that, you know, when I was a head of department. And that is something so simple that everybody can implement. So you have been part of the Crew Safety Forum since it began. For everybody that doesn't know what the Crew Safety Forum is a group that comes together with different people, individuals, companies in the industry that are working towards a better safety environment and crew well-being in the yachting industry, really in the maritime industry, followed by PACE Tragedy. This is where everybody kind of like came together through this group with the intention of creating real lasting change, right, in the industry. There has been a lot of discussions in the groups. So how have those conversations influenced the way you approach your onboarding now, or the way you are approaching how you're actually your captaincy, since you obviously joined the safety firm?
Yeah, very, very good question. And the group is phenomenal. I'm just humbled to be included because I do look at the names and I'm like, wow, you know, Captain Herb and Caroline yourself and, you know, just Corrine. I'm just like, these are people I look up to as well because they're experts in their fields. So to, you know, one of them's been part of the group, although it's a tragedy how it started, it plants seeds and those seeds grow. And for me, when I read all the information in the group and different angles, and there's a lot of things to take in, I just put a little seed in the back going, okay, when crew join or when crew have an issue, how do I identify it and how do I escalate it individually, not externally? Because the first step to help someone is to make sure you're prepared to help them and not just going, how are you? Are you okay? How can I help? That's a little bit erratic. And sometimes that doesn't help. Whereas the best thing may be simply to write a note saying, you know, you look lovely, have a wonderful day, anything you need, I'm here to help, from a captain, or words like that. So how it's changed me is I've made sure crew have that network of people and companies available. And I do that by posting on the crew mess. Make sure IceOne's there. I make sure different details like your mermaids and your information's there. So they see your bulletins, the crew coach, you know, Yachty Minds Matter. people can choose whichever one they want. As long as they choose someone to go to that is outside the problem. And the problem isn't usually just one person. The problem isn't just one crew member against one crew member. It's traditionally a cultural issue on board that has led to an issue, an environment arising where things are acceptable. And that's where I think you need to really, as a captain, take ownership and then look at those people and say, okay, everyone, let's just tone it down. We don't all have to get on. And that's what I say a lot of my time on Monday meetings. I say, crew, we don't all have to get on. What we do have to do is try better than last week. And we have to communicate a little bit more. So that's kind of what changes in me is how I proactively look at identifying issues and taking positive steps by surrounding the crew member with an environment of love, support, compassion, but access to professional help. Because that's not us. That's not me. That's not my crew. We can only be positive and happy. We don't have the mental skill set. I'm developing it. I'm trying to do the courses, but I'm not a professional. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's key. You know, when there's conflict on board, whether it's small conflict, you know, they took my cheese away. I have seen fights about cheese or assault or harassment, right? Bullying, like something bigger. I think a lot of people, you know, we tend to think that we need to have the solution. And the reality is that we don't have to have the solution. We have to have the knowledge of the tools that are available and literally just allow the person to be seen, heard. And then we're like, hey, I'm not going to fix this problem, but I'm going to make sure that you feel that you have somebody to talk to and that you have support. And then we'll figure it out. I'll help you figure it out, right? Yeah. That's where having the tools and the people available, whether that be on the crew mess or knowing who to call, that's super important because I think a lot of people tend to not, you know, they're not prepared. And if we know something about yacht is that you always have to be prepared, right? Like preparation is key for everything. So, you know, you have to be one step ahead. And that also goes into the crew relations and conflict solutions. You're already preparing. You're already ahead of the game. Okay, if something happens, these are the people I can call. They can, you know, look at the availability of people here, even if they don't want to talk to me about it, right? Like they know what the resources are. And I think that's the biggest thing before thinking that we have to be the ones fixing, resolving the conflict, you know, is really about showing up with presence, which is what you're saying, and saying, hey, I hear you. We're going to figure it out together.
Yeah. Also, you know, other heads of the department have a huge responsibility and people don't talk about that enough. Like my chief stewardess is not just the chief stewardess. She's there to make sure that she's working with the deck crew and they're okay. And the chief officer and the chief engineer, we're a management system, a corporate structure. And we have to talk about what is our cultural brief? What is our culture on board? Is it a really professional, is it a really strict naval, you know, authoritarian leadership style? Or is it a relaxed, positive environment? I have a rule, because I know we want action items, is that I have this action item, which is no work talk in the crew mess. And that's hard. It's hard. And it's hard for a junior stew who wants to ask me a question, or it's hard for an engineer to sit and have his coffee without someone telling him the lights are off. But over time, it works because it forces a discomfort of silence that then forces an interaction to say, so where are you from? Oh, cool. Interesting. What do you like? Oh, walking. Oh, maybe we go for a walk next week. Or it encourages something above just the what time are the guests showing up? Well, my uniform's not ready. It takes that area out and that becomes a safe place. And yachts don't have safe places, let's be honest. You can pretend it's the crew mess or the bow or the bridge, but it's just so difficult. So you have to cherish these crew areas.
No, I agree with you. And I love that rule because, like you said, it almost forces you to have a little bit of your life back, you know? Normality within the abnormal world that we live when we're on board. You know, it's like this captain just told me the other day, oh, I'm about to go into my luxurious prison. And I was like, you know, we were reasoning about it, but I was like, there's a little bit of truth to that, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're kind of stuck there until the end of the season or whatever. And I think And then we're consumed by it. And we talk about it when we go out. We talk about it when we're in the crew mess. We talk about it all the time. So I think it's great that even within the work environment, you're not allowed to share that in the family room, right? Which is the crew mess. It's like, let's talk about normal things. Like, what are your dreams? Like, what are your goal? What's happening with your investment? Like, life. So you often talk about the importance of emotional intelligence and mental health leadership. And you have obviously shared a lot of what does that look like in your, you know, in your presence. Let's talk about what habits, boundaries, or daily routines have helped you build trust and strengthen morale on board. I know that you already talked about a little bit about your onboarding, how you welcome people, also how you're having these rules where people can talk about life versus talking about work. What else it's you have implemented?
I think, I don't know if it's good or bad, but the biggest one for me is to be vulnerable and be transparent. And to, you know, that's only really happened to me the last couple of years, whether social media or not. It's more about the people I've met in this journey. And what vulnerable is saying, you know, oh, it's hot out there, or to the deck crew, relate to them in a certain way, or be vulnerable in the sense that, oh, this is a tough passage coming up. Are we okay? Is there anything I can do to help? They're the small things. And also share things that work for you. Like every morning I do this 10-minute calm app. And it's this tomorrow at 11 and it's 10 minutes. And it's a tough 10 minutes because it's 2 minutes of speaking, 8 minutes, 6 minutes of silence, 2 minutes of speaking. And I shared that. I thought, oh, that was a tough morning. 10 minutes and 6 minutes of being quiet is tough for me because I like talking. But, you know, what do you do to help others? What do you do to find your space? And when you ask someone that question, what do you do to make yourself feel better? And some might say, I watch rugby. Perfect. When's the next game? So a lot of it's about, you know, taking some vulnerability off that structure of just being a strict, you know, unapproachable captain, to providing that space that you can have a relationship with crew at different levels, and also creating that safe space. Like the bridge, yes, it's an open door policy. I'd love if you make an appointment because then we can allocate time, but still come in. And what you tell me, I don't have to share it with the chief, the heads of the department. It's about not me doing anything. It's about me listening to the problem. And when you tell someone your problem, you naturally feel a lot better. So that's kind of my open door policy, which I got from an old captain years ago, that he didn't talk. And people would tell him everything. And as a chief officer, I'd be like, he doesn't say anything. How does everyone love this guy who never says anything? But they all feel better when they leave. And that's what I learned. So open door policy, listen, don't talk, and create those safe spaces on board.
What's your advice for those that maybe are more reserved or are a little bit scared of opening up a little bit more because maybe they feel like they won't be as seen as the respectable captain if they don't, you know, they're too nice to the crew or, you know, in that sense?
In the end, it's a very unsympathetic business and you have to make hard decisions as a captain, really hard decisions. You've got to talk to someone and then a week later to let them go. So my advice to captains and any head of department, just don't have favorites. Just don't have favorites. It's like children, you know, not that I treat crew like children anyway, but you can't just have a favorite crew member and always talk to them and help them. You have to be neutral, and you have to, even people that I don't like, for whatever reason, I still have to be respectful and professional and open to them and provide them a space, because the goal is always the standard we aim to keep. And without the team individually succeeding, we cannot succeed as a community, as a team. So that only works, that approach of listening and open door and being supportive, only works if you don't have favorites. And that's hard. But there's professional life and there's your personal life. And they're two very different things. So my professional life, I have to treat all crew equally. Junior deckhand all the way up to chief engineer and chef. Equal respect, equal opportunity to be transparent, have an open door policy. But what you can't do is then say to someone, I'm going to spend more time with you. Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's do this. Take time. I went for great walks with my second engineer this year that I've not much in common with, but it aligned. And we had a great opportunity. Doesn't mean he's my favorite crew member. It just means we have to be neutral. So that's the key I'd give to captains. Just don't have favorites. You know, it is a professional environment, not in a personal environment. The personal environment comes in after years of developing relationships with people on and off the boat. You know, keep your professionalism.
Absolutely. And you talked about training. You have done some training that you're, you know, developing your leadership skills and other areas, because obviously we do a lot of training when it comes to licensing and, you know, the maritime training that's required. But then the self-development tends to kind of take the back seat for many of us. I kind of wonder, what have been your experience as a captain? Have you encountered that principals and management, do they encourage these type of trainings for head of departments, for crew, for captains to develop? Or is it more the person individually has to want this and then, you know, invest in their skills?
Good question. The answer is, I think no across the board. I don't think the management companies see value in emotional intelligence or mental fitness. I don't think they see true financial value in ocean conservation. And that's sad for me. I think a budget line item should be continuing education, including mental fitness or mental health. And it should be environmental sustainability. But back to mental health or mental fitness, I think it's important that you just keep being persistent in your approach to showing the return on investment in terms of longevity or relationships on board. The positive feel that the owners get when they walk on board, they all want that. They want the crew unity. They all talk about it. All the brokers love that. Oh, the crew get on really well. Some of the best comments I've got is that the junior deckhand is happy when they greet him. Now, to get that happy junior deck crew, because they've got a tough job, you have to invest in, you know, resources and training, like Seize the Mind, like the crew coach, like Icewine. They all do these courses, which I think are fantastic. But you have to convince the owner and management companies that this is just like an STCW. This is training your crew to get mentally prepared for the challenges they're going to face so they succeed a season or 2 years or whatever it is. So my answer is, not enough is being done. It's a horrible environment still to work in terms of the tools that the crew get given. It should be a requirement on boarding to do a mental health check, or once a year, once every 6 months, from an external factor that's not related to the management company, the owner, or the vessel. Because that's my biggest takeaway, is third-party oversight must happen. That comes through mental awareness and different resources.
No, I agree with you. And I think, you know, the ROI, the return of investment, I think there's enough data as of today.
Yeah.
For management or captains or whoever is managing the vessel or even recruiting, for the principal to showcase, hey, this is what's actually happening and this is how we can mitigate it and this is how we can make it better. And these are the resources, and this should be part of your, you know, financial planning.
Yeah.
Because this is part of, because at the end of the day, one crew member that, you know, every time you have to change crew, it costs a lot of money, a lot of money. And I mean, I've seen crew on boats change drastically, like every week, every 2 weeks, every month. That's a lot of money down the drain when you could have just spent probably a lot less money underwriting individuals and created a really good foundation for the vessel. And then, you know, then you have that ROI, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky because I've got the Northrop & Johnson and the owner of Unbridled. They're unbelievably supportive in me kind of choosing a path that I feel will work for our goals. So they give me that freedom. But a lot of owners and management companies don't have that freedom. So the freedom comes that maybe I'm making mistakes, maybe I'm not, but I'm focusing on crew mental health, environmental sustainability. And the industry are telling me, Captain Liam, that's good. That's a good thing you're doing. And the crew keep coming back. They may leave because they're tired or have a problem, but they generally end up coming back. And that's the biggest measure for me. When a crew member finishes a season, they've got to be tired. You have to be. There's no way to do what we do at our level without being exhausted. And I tell them, at the end of a season, if you want to quit, resign and leave, that's a normal feeling. You need to acknowledge that because this is tough what we do. So take your time now. The other thing is the onboarding process. Like when you employ crew, don't just employ crew for the certificates. Employ them for the attitude and the personality. Are they happy people? Are they, you know, free spirit in a sense, if that's what you're after? So figure out what your, as an action item, figure out at the captains and heads of department, what is your crew culture? What soft skills are you looking for to match that crew culture, not just the certificates and all the tick the boxes and the great references? Really get to know them personally by doing a Zoom call or an interview, or, you know, discussing with them what really their likes are, what upsets them, what do they look for in a captain, you know? They're the things that I think are important prior to onboarding and all this.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. So going back to two things that you just talked about. One, you said that you have been super lucky of having a principal, a management company that support the crew welfare and crew well-being. So my question to you about that, you know, what was the steps that you took to say, hey, this is what I want? And then these people are like, yep, okay, we're going to support you.
It comes down to like one, reducing, what is your culture on board? What do you want? I want a positive, happy crew. That's number one for me, because they can sustain so much more than the strict, diligent crew. A positive, happy crew can go through the highs and lows easier. So examples, wave wellness, $45 a person, $450 for 10 crew, for example, a month. That's a no-brainer. And you get access to financial, physical, emotional resources. So I say to the owners, for the same amount of money you're paying for one or two crew members' medical insurance that they don't even use sometimes because they're healthy 21-year-old, let's just allocate that $450 or $1,000 a month for an opportunity for crew to get resources and do courses and go to some fitness training or do some yoga classes. That's kind of where I look at the return on investment of saying, let's just try it for 3 to 6 months and then try something else. Try to do a mental health course. You've got to keep trying different things to build your culture because it changes too based on where you are. Unbridled was an East Coast program. It's now a West Coast, Seattle, Alaska program. They're two very different mindsets. So it takes the crew to change, but also prepare themselves mentally for those things. So it's a return on investment, but it's also what I call, it should be a fixed cost, just like fuel, just like dockage, just like these are fixed costs, and it's investing in your crew. Because your crew is one of the biggest expenses on the boat. So get yourself an insurance policy on your crew. That's my advice to captains going to owners. You've got insurance on the boat. What's your insurance on the crew? You're paying a little bit medically, but you're not paying anything emotionally or mentally or financially. So invest in your crew and it'll pay back.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it seems like it's not that complicated, right? It's like, this is what I would like to do. And hopefully you have a good principal that you're working for. And then they would, you know, allow you to explore, because like you said, you do have to explore certain things. What works for some crew might not work for others. And there's, like you said, there are different priorities at different times. So there's so many new tools out there. And I feel like we're definitely underusing them again, because we continue to be on that standard that got us exactly where we are, which is not where we want to be. So we have to do it differently, because if we continue to do the same thing, I mean, we're not, you know, there's not going to be the positive change that we're all looking for.
The things that don't cost, everyone always talks about the costs of things. The things that don't cost are good mornings, good afternoon, take the rubbish out for the stewardesses. That's something as a captain I can do. And people might look at me strange, or the captain, don't do that. I'm like, that's cool. I wouldn't mind walking to the dock and go for a walk down and put the rubbish in the bin. Let's just share some responsibilities so we're all in this together. And that's the unity that is really hard to build. And it takes not money, it takes everyone just trying to be a little bit better for each other.
Yeah, I agree. That's something simple that we can all do and that we should, probably emphasize more, because we kind of get into our little headspace and we forget about, the culture on board and how we also have to sustain it and we have to create it. It's not just a given, right? We create it. So going back to the principles, one of the things that I have seen as a crew member and also as a partner of a captain, it's really hard for captains to say no. At least when it comes down to management, charter brokers, principals, probably with crew, it's a little bit easier to say no to them. But for the people that are, kind of above, my partner literally ended up in the hospital for over a week because of stress. And it was related to the fact that he kept pushing his own boundaries, also pushing the crew boundaries, because he kept agreeing to what management was saying, what principals were saying. And, they just push. And he pushed so hard that he collapsed.
Yeah.
So that was a wake-up call for him. Obviously, I would like for other people to not have to go through a physical disease or illness or something like that to realize, hey, I need to set boundaries and it's okay to say no. So what's your take on that? How have you, since you started your captaincy career, how has that changed? Where do you feel it's okay to say no? And when do you really think, okay, well, this wouldn't be ideal, but I can say no. Like, what are those specific moments?
These questions are getting harder and harder. You're escalating it here, which is great. I love it. As a captain, after so many years, I've heard crews say to me, you're just a yes man. You're a yes man. And that's hard to hear, really hard, because most times crew don't understand the whole story. And as a captain, you have this whole, all different angles coming at you, from owners, brokers, the ocean, the mother ocean, the weather, the crew. And they're like, why have we got to leave? And you're like, cool, let me gather all this information and make a decision. I'll then say another thing, a bit more positive, is I'm married 17 years successfully, and your partner's married to a Latin woman as well. Mine's Dominican. Saying no is very difficult sometimes too, But boundaries protect integrity. If you understand that, that's the key to being a good captain. Boundaries, protect integrity. Owners respect boundaries. And crew respect boundaries. When you say no drinking on board, that's a boundary. When you say no partying the day before a charter, that's a boundary. You've also got to give a why. And so boundaries protect integrity, but what's the why? And if you can focus on safety, which is our number one goal, above all and everything, the safety of the crew, the safety of the ship, and the safety of the owner's assets. So, no, we're not going to go out drinking tonight, crew, because we've got a big charter tomorrow. We want to make sure we get through this safely. At the end of the charter, we can go have a big party. So it's very hard to say no. You've got to use slightly different words and then wrap it in this bow or package of safety. And that's usually why we say no to things. No to the owner, we can't leave today, because we're just not ready. We're just not ready. And it's not going to be safe for us to proceed to sea. We've had some things come up and we really want to make sure we do a smaller sea trial, come back, and we'll be ready first thing in the morning.
Have you ever been fired or had a bad respond, or it will be a reaction in this case, from a principal or management or charter for saying no, this is a boundary because of safety? Because I feel like a lot of the times, we talk about safety when it comes down to the vessel physicality or, fueling and environments or whatever, the engines. But when it comes to mental safety of the crew, that's not really considered as a safety. And then the boundaries cross, and then you have people, you know, going through really hard times just because we have been pushed over the limit, because we're always going to be pushed to the absolute max, always. But then there's always, then there's times where it's not even the max. It's just like over.
Yeah.
And that really can really break somebody, you know, mentally and physically. And I feel like a lot of the times that aspect is never considered, or usually never considered, when making those no or yes decisions. Or do you consider that? Like, what has been your experience with that?
Well, I think a good leader, a good captain must look ahead and foresee, be proactive, not reactive. When your foot's in the mud or in the shit and your foot's in there, you got your foot there. You know what I mean? So you can't then all of a sudden say, no, we can't go because my foot's in the mud. You've got to look ahead so much. And I always say to captains and, you know, colleagues, is 3 to 6 months. That is the world I live in. I do not live in the day. The crew live in the day. The heads of department live in the week and the month. And I live in the 3 to 6 months. And that's my world. That 3 to 6 months, what is the yacht doing? Where do we need to be? What are the budgets? What's the timeline? For example, we had a trip, we did a charter in Costa Rica, then a passage to Newport, then a boat show, and then a passage to Newport West Coast up to Alaska, all in at least 1 month. And there was not a day between it. But for months, I was telling the crew, charter, depart, boat show, Alaska. That's our month, people, and we are not going to stop on that month. And the crew were like, oh, can we just have a day after the charter? I said, it doesn't exist. We'll try and get a day after the charter. We'll try and get a day in San Diego. We'll try and get a day in Newport. But that month is that month. But what I'm going to do is give you all a week off. See you next Monday. You know, because I'm paying ahead. And that's kind of what I think a captain, my advice to captains and heads of department is plan ahead and pay ahead. Pay ahead. Because once your foot's in the mud, that's when you have to start saying no to the owner, I can't do it. No, I can't do it. It's more like, I can't make this passage with our tender in tow, so I'm going to leave the tender here. Can we ship it? Cool. I can't do this, but here's the steps I can take. So it's not really a hard no. It's more of a, we've got some other options. Does that make any sense? It's diplomacy, 101 diplomacy.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I understand. But I think that's important, where when we are already being given the knowledge of like, hey, this is what's going to happen. We're going to go. We're going to have no days off. But then I'm going to, like you said, pay ahead. Like, I'm going to give you time off. Yeah. There's like that light at the end of the tunnel, you know?
Or they'll give the light now. My advice is don't give the light at the end, because is it a train, you know, or is a donkey with a torch? Like, the light's going to hit you either way. So my advice is give the light now. Invest in your crew on the front end. Before the charter, give the girls a spa day. Before the charter, give the guys a golf day. Don't wait till the end, because at the end, it changes. You're yachting. Next day, next charter, next trip, it flips quickly. You've got to try and just plan out, you know, pay forward is my advice to owners and crew and management companies. Pay your crew forward. Pay them in advance for the month worked, you know, which people won't understand, but you've already been paid our work, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I've got a lot of owners, principals. I don't really like the word owners, you know, their own principals. They may not even know what's happening, and they may be totally okay and agreeable to a lot of these things. But if the captain or whoever is in charge doesn't actually, you know, say, hey, we want this, we want to do this for the crew, we want to do that, it doesn't get done, because it's not going to come out of their mind. Like, hey, are you giving, you know, people a golf day, a spa day? You know what I mean? Like, they're not, that's not their job, right? So I think we, the people that are in charge of others, we need to start making this a standard, and then explaining to, you know, the principals or management or whoever, like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
The safety behind it, because really there's a safety component to the human component, you know, of like thinking of their, what you said, like their mental fitness, the same as physical fitness. So this kind of leads into what I want to talk about with you about human resources. So you know, many vessels, even those with management and designated DPAs, they still don't have proper human resources structure in place to support the crew, to support the captain. How has the lack of HR support challenged you in your captain role?
What the goal is retention. The goal is positive crew, high standard. So it doesn't exist. Human resources, you're 100% correct. It doesn't exist. There's a transition from looking for a crew member to a crew agency to onboarding, and that's it. So there's no really HR on board, which is the saddest thing for me, because a lot of times when I work with an owner, I try and tap into their resources, whether it's accounting for budgeting purposes, that the accountants, we're not accountants, captains, and even purses. The owners are wealthy and they have accountants. So use those resources and human resources. My human resource team is the whole crew, especially the heads of department. They know my vision. I don't need to babysit usually the heads of department. They know who I am and what I'm about. So when we have to find someone, we try not to bring it down to just one person making a decision. It's usually the head of department. This is bring me three candidates. Anyone on the crew have a candidate, bring it in. A pile of candidates, and then we work through it. The negative side of it is there is no corporate structure. There's no follow-up when it doesn't go right. And that's the bit I think we miss in yachting, because then we can't correct our issues. We can't correct the problems. Why do we employ this chief stewardess or this stewardess that has this attitude? How did that come to being on board? No one questions that, and we just try again. So the big negative of human resources is you don't have accountability in the decisions you make. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's talking about recruitment, obviously, but HR is so much more than just recruitment. It's really dealing with that human side of things, of when there's a grievance procedure happening, when there's a conflict, when there's something like that. I think when there's no external structure, is really hard if the captain is the perpetrator, right? How do you handle that? So
I think, you know, I shouldn't say this, but I think the industry has a problem with overvalued of a captain. And that's a horrible thing to say as a captain. But I'll be honest, we get a lot of respect and a lot of freedom. And that's great when we're at sea. But it doesn't mean we have all the skills to manage these things correctly. So that's where I kind of have a reliance on the people around me, the owners team, the brokerage team like Northrop & Johnson, and their crew placement services and your crew placement services. And I try and have this dialogue back and forth that has a lot more depth to it, because we don't have those things in yachting. You're 100% right.
Yeah.
So how do we bring them in?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question, right? And I think that there's a lot of tools and people, you know, creating tools that are going to support us. I think there's a responsibility that's missing, or accountability. Yeah. You know, from major key players, yeah. Everybody wants a piece of the cake, but not everybody wants to, you know, be accountable of what that actually means. Like, for example, you know, I have an agency here in Puerto Rico, and I'm also a recruiter through my agency. And the way I was doing recruitment was wrong.
Yeah.
Because it was the way that I was shown, but it wasn't the right way. And that's when I decided, okay, I have to do it differently, because if I want to create a change, it's up to me. It's not up to everybody to, you know, to share the standard with me. I have to implement the standard. So for example, one of the things that you were talking about, now we implement in the recruitment, we do psychometric assessments. Mm. And that, ideally, what do I really want to do in the future? I have the vessel profile assessment. I have all the crew members' assessment, right?
Yeah.
But for now, we have the person that we're trying to recruit, we're going to do an assessment, right? And I can tell you how big of a difference that has been. Because what you perceive, what you assume, but people might be selling you on an interview,
right,
it's very different from what the assessment tells you. And not in a bad way, but it almost like takes off the layers and lets you see where this person is going to thrive and where is it going to have challenges? And can this person culturally fit, and obviously with a skill, fit with the dynamics on the vessel? So I am lucky that the clients that I have for recruitment, I've known them for many, many years, and I know the crew, so I know the dynamics so well that it's almost as if I already have an assessment of the vessel and the crew. So it's easier for me to understand if it's going to be a match or not. But even when I know, and I went through interviews with people, and I'm thinking this person is going to be like this, that assessment comes back. I was like, oh, that's not how they are. That's not how they deal with things, you know? So it's really interesting. I think something so easy. I'm integrating the assessment through SuperYacht references. They give them, and it's just been amazing. Like, the captains are happy with it. I'm super happy. The crew members are also happy with it. We also had implemented background checks, which I know is not the solution to everything, but it's a basic standard that should be there.
Yeah.
So why are we not doing it? You know, it doesn't take that long. It's not that expensive, you know, and we make a lot of money anyway. So why are we not utilizing part of that revenue to make it better? You know, not to charge more, but you're already charging, like, give a better service. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was in that position where I was like, hey, I'm getting my piece of the cake. What am I actually giving back here? Yeah. Am I walking the talk, or I'm just, you know, another person? Ooh, no, my problem. No, it's not everybody's problem, and everybody can do something from where we're at. You're doing it from the helm, you know, doing the leadership inside of your vessel. I'm doing it from the recruitment and other places. So I think everybody can be at service and be part of the solution for sure. And with the HR, you know, going back to that, I think it comes down to accountability and starting to create, you know, you're giving a service. It's like if you have a DPA,
yeah,
and you're giving that service to a boat, you should give HR.
Yeah.
Because the DPA is almost a little bit like an HR, right? It's like that designated person ashore that you call where something goes bad. But those people sometimes are not even trained on how to handle things. They don't even sometimes have knowledge of what actually is living on board, you know? And there are training for DPAs. I've seen them, you know, in the shipping companies. So, yeah, I think we need to start, you know, being more accountable for the things that we do and we offer. I think that's how change is really created, you know?
I agree with you 100%. Even the payroll company, they're not really interested in this. Whereas, you know, human resources can be all of that. Also the mental health. So you have access to someone to talk to outside that captain network or that crew network. So I agree with you. The human resources is a big hole we're missing in the yachting industry that I think can be fulfilled a little bit by the management companies, the vessel, the crew replacement. But you're different because you've got firsthand experience in the industry and you've been through some huge hurdles. So you understand what crew are going through. But a lot of times these crew agencies and crew are just presenting a resume hoping to get a job, and they fluff it up as much as they can. And they know that crew change quick. So we've got to slow down the crew placement and almost, like, I don't know, value the crew more. So it's almost like football where you poach crew sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, I know for me, I look for crew months and months and years out. I had one girl, 4 years I tried to work with her, you know, and I finally worked with her. And it was great. It was like, I knew she had something special. And every kind of couple of years, how's things? Yep. And then every time she wanted a job, she'd contact me back and forth. You know, so it's create your network of like-minded souls or people that can create a, you know, cohesive team that gets the result for the clients.
I think that's one, like, really bringing rotation into this can really help, because the reality is rotation is an amazing ROI. It is for everybody. It's a win-win for the crew. It's a win-win for the principal financially. Because if you already have a rotation crew and somebody gets sick, then you have somebody that you can bring in. You're not panicking 24 hours. I have a charter guest. We're not going to lose this money. We're not going to say no. And then you're like bringing somebody that maybe is a drunk or maybe it's just not the right cultural fit. And then it actually makes it even harder for crew for that week than if that person wasn't even there at all, you know, because I see this often. So I think having the standard should be a rotational crew. Doesn't matter what size of the vessel, you should always have people ready to go if something happens with the crew on board. That way, that saves a lot of money and it saves a lot of headaches. And then you can prepare and you can recruit for the long term. And then that crew more than likely will stay for years, because I've seen it. People that are on rotation tend to stay years on board.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, 5, 6, you know, minimum 2. Minimum. I always see that, you know.
Yep. There's a lot of insecurity crew have when they go on holidays. Are they going to be fired? Is the temp person wanting my job? What if I do the job for less? There's all these insecurities, and the crew have to step up into different roles. It creates a very messy environment. So with rotations, it's like, yep, there's your transition. You've got someone coming in at the same level. That's your working colleague. And you two, the better you both work together, the better the results.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, people need to do the numbers, because in reality, it may look like you're paying more, but in reality, probably not, because you're going to spend a lot more every time you change crew. You know, flights, this, the other thing. I mean, just a nightmare. And that's why, even as a recruiter, I have let go of clients that are asking me to recruit in what I used to think was normal, like 24 hours, 5 days, but whatever it is. I'm like, no, like, I'm not going to do that. You can go to an agency that wants your money and don't care, because I'm not going to do that anymore. So again, it's like setting up the standard for your own self and then opening the space for the right people come to you, so you can give the right service that they deserve. And the ones that don't care for the service, then they can continue to use, you know, what's out there that's not really working and is just adding to the issue.
I always end up paying it forward. Like my approach with crew, to pay it forward, pay it forward. You know, create that network that you're doing wonderfully to pay the services forward. So crew come to you and companies come to you with more value for what you're offering.
Thank you. So I want to wrap up with, in the past, you have mentioned that as a captain, you are often on the bridge. And by the time issues reach you, it cannot already cross a threshold.
Yep.
So how do you keep a real pulse on what's happening below deck? What are the signs that tell you your crew is either thriving or struggling? Yeah. What was that for you?
I don't think I'll ever know the truth. You know, that it's unfortunately, you know, captains live with their heads in the cloud, where we have to live in a world between owners, brokers, agents, crew, boats. You know, we live in this funny space. And so you don't really know what's going on with owners. You don't really know what's going on with brokers. You don't really know what's going on with crew. But you're responsible for all of it. So I don't think you'll always know. You have to have a trust. You have to have faith that people have good intentions, and that it comes to choosing the right crew. And the other thing too is not listening to a lot of the stories. People will tell you one thing, the reality is something else, you know, and that reality is something else or someone else's reality. So don't just react, you know. It really comes down to creating a good crew culture where incidents will happen. It's the reality. Incidents are going to happen. Ashore, on board, conflicts, fights. But if you continually be positive and try and wear those negative scenarios down with transparency and humor, and people will eventually realize that small drama isn't important. The fact that someone threw a wet towel in the laundry on the floor and cursed and ran off, well, the cursing wasn't about them. They had a real bad experience and they fell into water and they're embarrassed. So there's always two sides to the story. Not that the deckhand threw a wet towel into the laundry chute. That's their version. But the other version is he fell in the water, felt embarrassed, as the example. So I used to have this, I don't get involved in politics. That's usually my parameter, is no work talk in the crew mess. I do not get involved in politics until it affects your work performance. So the moment it affects your work performance, then we must address that immediately. And if that includes the politics, then we're open. The book's open. What happened? What's the problem? How do we prevent it in the future? I'm not here to blame you. I'm here to prevent it in the future and protect you. So that's generally my policy, is things will happen. You can't control it all. You know, these are high stressful environments with passionate people who make mistakes. We'll do it. So it's just, don't get involved in politics. And people are telling me stuff, cool, awesome. Get on with your day. It's all right. Let's support both parties in this by giving them space and love and support. that let's not get involved. The other one is, unless it's urgent safety wise, you don't have to react. You don't have to make a decision and fire one person. You can just have a chat to individually or tomorrow or the health department and say, it doesn't feel like we're going down the right path here. Let's, what can we do to go back down this right path? Or do you feel like we're continuing going down the wrong path? And that's okay. You can leave. You can resign. You can have a week off. There's all these options. Just take your head out of the pressure cooker of the world of yachting and have a rest mentally somehow. Call your family, take 2 days off, let's reset. You know, change your job roles from laundry to service tube so you're out of that space. So there's a whole myriad of options. But number one is it's just don't get too involved in group politics. And if all crew work together with a common goal of being positive and healthy and happy, then I think we'll be okay, you know?
I agree. So let's do some quick fire reflections before we wrap up. What's one leadership myth you'll retire forever?
A leadership myth? That power is king. Mm. You know, you don't lead by power, you lead by presence.
One well-being practice you'll never skip.
10 minutes in the morning, just close your eyes, listen to the sunrise, you know, which means listen to nothing, just zone out.
Mm-hmm. And one message for the next generation of captains.
And next generation of captains, don't be reactive. Please be proactive. Look ahead before you put your foot in the mud. You know, just be proactive. Do not be reactive. They'll all come at you. Just be cool. Find peace in the presence and plan ahead.
Perfect. Thank you so much for sharing all this knowledge with us, your experience, your transparency of how do you do things and the challenges that you have encountered and, you know, the solutions that have worked for you that potentially can work for others. So for all of you that don't know Captain Lee, it's part of the Yada International Radio community, a global platform bringing together voices that are shaping a healthier, more accountable yachting industry. If you enjoyed this conversation, make sure to tune into the Captain's Chat, where Captain Liam dives even deeper into leadership, mental health, and the human side of life at sea, and a lot more than that. You can watch his episodes on the Yachting International Radio and follow him on social media for more insight into modern captaincy and crew culture. Thank you for listening. And remember, true leadership isn't just about running a yacht. It is about creating a space where everybody on board can thrive. So until next time.
If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.